are listening to the Nasty Backpack Podcast.
What up, everybody? It's your boy, Nasty Backpack. Y'all tuning in to the Nasty Backpack Podcast. We're bringing hope to Phoenix. Check out the YouTube channel if y'all ain't check it out yet. That's why I go out into the community, doing community outreach, trying to change people's lives, you know what I mean? Give them a chance to learn, be educated a little bit on different type of treatments that might work for them to get sober, get off these streets. You know, I'm going to start helping these folks get phones and IDs and get into the treatment and you know, just show them that there is hope in the valley. And that's what I'm looking to do in these streets. Just kind of try to clean up our streets as much as we can, because I don't feel like enough of that's happening in the world. A lot of these people get written off by their families, by their friends, by their communities, and they just become kind of like a thorn in the community, and nobody really fucks with them or tries to help them get sober, get better. They just kind of drive by and criticize them. Sometimes give them a couple bucks to get something to eat, but not really helping them progress in life. And with the amount of fentanyl that's getting into our communities, it's really, really destroying our community at a very rapid rate. It's just sad that not enough people see that, you know what I mean? And I always say, if you go back like 2 years, 3 years ago, you didn't see this much homelessness going down in our communities. And now it's like really, really taking over. So that's just what I'm trying to do to clean up these streets. Like I said, if you ain't been to the YouTube channel, go check it out. Hope for Phoenix. Again, that's Hope for Phoenix. Go check out that channel. Anyways, let's get to the show. So today I kind of wanted to give my insight on being a case manager, doing community outreach, and what it took me to really start getting involved in this kind of work. And for me, I never knew anything about addiction. I never knew anything about behavioral health. I never knew anything about SMI. You know, I used to smoke weed and you know, drink, but casually, you know, never to a level where I was like falling into addiction. And so without me being ever going down that route, how did I get into becoming a case manager and doing community outreach for people dealing with substance abuse? Well, let's get into it. This is my story. Let's tell it. So what happened was, I had lost my job. I was working at a call center, and at the end of 2018, in the middle of 2018, I lost my job. You know, I was raising my 6 kids. You know, we were renting a house in the Phoenix area, and things just kind of went to hell, and I lost my job. It was getting close to Christmas time, and I was putting applications out everywhere because, one, my kids just had a birthday, and I had to hustle just to, you know, give them a good birthday. But then Christmas was right around the corner, and I had to figure out what I was going to do. I had to get back into the workforce. I couldn't take it anymore. And so I was applying through all these staffing agencies, and I got staffed. I got a phone call from a young lady who told me that they have a position open. It starts tomorrow. I got to be there at 9 a.m. Do I want the job? So I was like, yeah, sure, of course. I need it. I need that money. I need that job. And so I went and showed up at 9 o'clock in the morning to a methadone clinic. Now, this methadone clinic has been really ramped up and remodeled and everything, but at the time, it was, I remember the first day I walked in, and it was almost like there was like a cloud of smoke just like in the middle of the lobby. It was jam-packed. There was probably about 20 people in the lobby waiting to get their dose. There was a line at the front desk. There was a lady who was, there was a client who was talking to a staff member in the middle of the lobby, so she was giving her story. And the first day I walk in and I see a guy sitting there wearing a full body pink onesie. Is that, I think that's what it's called, like a full pajama pants, and I mean pajama outfit that zips up in the middle. And I was just like, oh shit, where am I at? You know, it was wild. It was the most wildest thing I've ever seen. And at that time, not coming from addiction, you know, I really didn't know what I was getting into. I really didn't know what I was doing. Or so anyways, I let the front desk know, like, yo, my name's Steven. I'm starting here today. And she's like, yeah, hold tight. So I waited for about 10 minutes in this lobby, and I was just like looking back and forth, and I was just like, oh shit, like this place is like, it's wild in here, you know? And, you know, finally a lady from the back comes out and introduces herself as the transportation coordinator and gave me a tour of the building. Told me what they do, which I really didn't have an understanding of it at the moment, but later on that all will come. And I became a transportation coordinator for clients getting to and from the clinic. So you know, this lady who's like in her 50s, she was the transportation coordinator, and then it was me. And you know, I was in charge of answering all the phone calls that came into the clinic that was in regards to transportation, learning the transportation systems. There was multiple kinds for different companies that dealt with different insurances. And you pretty much just answer every phone call that comes through. I had my own office. It was a sweet little gig. But anyways, I, you know, from answering those phone calls, I developed relationships with the clients on, you know, helping them coordinate their rides to and from the clinic every day. So I did that for about 6 months. And when I got hired, they told me that eventually I would have to relocate to the to a clinic that's a little bit closer to where I was living. But they told me eventually I would be transferring to the call center. So I was like, okay, that's fine. You know, I don't have no problem with that. But then the day came when they finally transferred me to the... And when they, you know, the first day they transferred me, I guess it was super rough for them when transportation and phone calls were the second day they took me back to the clinic I was at to complete my assignment for transportation coordinator there. Over time, I grew out of that position and earned a position at the front desk, doing all the front desk stuff, checking clients in, you know, informing them of their stops, scheduling doctor's appointments, scanning and linking documents. And working that front desk is where you really develop your skills, because it's, to me, it's one of the hardest jobs in the building, because you gotta, one, always have a smile on your face. No matter what kind of day you're having, just know that somebody walking through that door to the clinic has probably had a worse day than you. So you gotta show them, you know, you gotta give them a smile so that it just makes them feel a little bit better about their day. And on top of that, you know, sometimes you gotta inform them of stops to their account that they have to deal with. And at the time, our team wasn't very, I mean, we had a mixed amount of counselors, case managers, And, you know, so a lot, at that time, you know, there was an issue. There was a lot of issues with stops, and, you know, clients didn't really become accustomed to having those stops. They really hated them because a lot of them just wanted to come in and dose and go and make that their daily routine. And, you know, I had to constantly remind them that, listen, you're in treatment. So if you have a stop to see a counselor, then that's just what you have to deal with, because the only way you're going to truly succeed in your treatment is by seeing a counselor on, you know, scheduled times on a regular basis, staying in compliance with the doctor, and dosing every day. Those are like the three key elements to MAT services or methadone maintenance. And so after I got really good at the front desk, I started noticing our case manager and kind of just mirroring her and observing her, you know, observing how she would handle clients and how she would talk to clients. And I knew right then that I wanted to be a case manager. I wanted to move up in my position and try to really get into the technical aspect of helping people get sober and helping them get clean. And so that's why I put my focus on, you know, observing her position, always asking her if I can help her, or, you know, if she needed something that, you know, to teach me. And she did. And eventually she left the company and that position became open, and I slid right in there like a, you know, major league baseball player that just hit a triple. I already had the position down as far as all the technical duties that go along with case management, you know, transferring clients in and out, setting up courtesy doses, you know, checking in with the clients, client engagement calls. You know, I really had a clean and clear aspect of it, and became pretty good at it. But then another case manager got hired. And so it was two of us, and I observing her and observing my counselors, I thought, like, man, like, I need to really step my game up as a case manager, because I want to kind of be a case manager that can help people really get clean with their treatment. And if you put the right plan in front of these people, you know, you can help everybody get clean if with the right plan. You just got to lay it out for them and hope that they take the bait. When they hired the other case manager, she had a lot of those skills on how to get clean. Her problem was she just didn't know how to utilize it. She came from the peer support background, and she found herself just crossing boundaries that, as a case manager, you really don't want to cross. You want to, you know, more help people on how to get sober, not try to do it for them. And so her position became overwhelming because she thought she could save everybody. She thought she could, you know, put a plan together for everybody, and she really didn't realize how to utilize her position. You know, she would meet with clients, and she would be with the client for three hours at a time. And at the end of that, the aspects of that, of those meetings, you know, the client would pretty much walk out with nothing, just, you know, pretty much in the same position when they walked in there. You know, some of them will walk out with, you know, coming out with residential treatment, but The point of me explaining her duties is that she didn't come up with a quick plan on how to get clients sober. And, you know, she just didn't have the right layout and the right game plan put together for these clients. So when she would go spend 3-4 hours with them and then they come out with nothing, you know, they kind of got discouraged a little about the treatment. They thought, I mean, it was felt more like a counseling session than going in and trying to utilize your tools and your resources to get these clients in a better position. So I did learn a lot from her. I learned how making certain phone calls and talking to certain people and keeping good relationships outside of your job with people. And you know, when you meet new people with different resources, keeping those relationships. And so what I do now, if I'm working through my clinic, you know, I focus on people's doses. I focus on people's dosing history, on triggers, cravings, things in that aspect that breaks down why they're failing in their treatment and why they're relapsing so much. And all I really do is just play it back to the client and let them know, listen, this is where you're messing up at. You're messing up because you're not showing up every day. So because you're not showing up every day, your dose is not that where it should be. And because your dose ain't where it should be, the methadone is not working like it should be working. On top of that, you know, you live in an environment that you got multiple triggers. You look at your phone, you got multiple triggers in your phone. You know, you're in a relationship that can be rocky at times. You're dealing with a case here and a case there. There's a lot of different things that can affect your treatment, and triggers is a major one, along with cravings. So what I try to get people to understand is you got to show up every day so that your dose can be at the right dose. Once your dose is at the right dose, then you can really focus on those cravings and get that cleared up. Once you get those cravings cleared up, then you really start utilizing your tools and finding out what triggers are triggering you at what time of the day. And once you get those triggers figured out, the ball game is just totally changed, and you have a little bit more control of your treatment. At least you know what it is that's causing you to slip up. And so I try to tell people this, listen, let's come up with a plan. I want you to write down all your triggers, bring them back to me, and let's follow up and let's kind of go through your triggers and see exactly, come up with a plan on how to overcome those triggers. You know, if the time they're having the cravings and the cravings are rising, I tell them, listen, make sure you're showing up every day. Let's schedule you a doctor's appointment. Let's get you a raise on your dose. Now, a lot of people are scared to go up on their dose because they have this misconception that it's really hard to get off of methadone. The withdrawals are a lot worse. You know, those are just misconceptions. If you work the program correctly, you get your dose to the right dose, you control your cravings, you control your triggers, and you become sober, you stay stable on that dose, and then you start tapering down off the dose. It's really not that hard. A lot of the times people cheat their treatment. A lot of times people will try to cut corners, or they think that they can keep those same contacts. They think they can hang out with those same people, remain in that same relationship, be in that same environment, hang out with those same friends, be around those same substances that got them there. And those are all triggers that cause a lot of people to relapse because they never fixed the situations around them that was causing them the trigger. They, you know, so they cheat their treatment a lot of the times, and when that happens, you know, they slip up. Happens a lot in the you know, so it's very important that once you begin to gain that strength to start overcoming those triggers, you know, you put those triggers behind you and you try not to ever bring them back out. Because once you put yourself back in that environment, once you put yourself next to those friends, next to those drugs, you put that phone number in there, you're constantly putting that reminder in your face that you could possibly slip up. And that happens a lot more times than not. And that's why I always say, like, relationships and treatment don't really go together. In those times, you have to be selfish. You really have to be selfish remember why you're going into treatment, and remember why, you know, everything that, you gotta remember everything that got you there. And once you get clean, then you can forget about that stuff. But you always gotta know what your triggers are gonna be. And so what ended up happening is I got really good at my position as a case manager. At least I feel that I'm really good. You know, I got a lot of experience. I've helped a lot of people, put a lot of people in treatment, put a lot of people in additional treatment centers like rehab, detox centers, residential treatment, sober livings, whatever, you know, it was that they were needing. I help people get housing, help people get cell phones. I work very well with other staff, peer supports, counselors, nurses, doctors, like front desk. I try to learn everybody's position and help out as much as I can. And that is a key to being a great employee anywhere. But when the clients see how hard you go at your job, you know, they really gain that respect for you. And then, you know, you got to also meet with the clients. You got to also engage with them, ask them how they're doing. There's not a client in that goes in my building that I don't know who they are, or haven't met with them, or, you know, we haven't chatted about something. I try to find out everybody's story and you know, kind of see where they're struggling at, and kind of try to figure out where I can help them at. And that's just what I do. But it got to a point where my hours started getting cut. It started getting reduced. So I'm not able to help as many people as I would like to help throughout the day at the position that I'm at. And so knowing everything that I know, and knowing everything that, you know, what it takes to kind of get sober, I thought about it, and I was like, you know what, let me take these skills to the street and see if I can make a change in my community and help some people go to get into some kind of treatment. Now, you know, I came up with a little game plan and decided, you know what, let's start a YouTube channel documenting this stuff, documenting that, you know, that this can be done. And maybe by somebody seeing somebody else's story, they can, a light bulb will go off in their head, and they can, you know, take teachings from some of these folks and utilize it in their own treatment and in their own recovery. And if not, at least they have a way to get to me where I can at least step in and help them figure that out if I got the time, or, you know, if we coordinated correctly. And so that's how I kind of got in the position I'm in now, where I'm trying to hit the streets every day and talk to young people, try to interview them to get, you know, a little bit of information from them, so I can come up with a quick little plan for them that to help them get sober. And I'm even willing to take them to the treatment centers of their choice to help get them a little bit more stable in their recovery. Because, like I said, a lot of times people forget about these people on these streets. We forget that, you know, that was somebody. That's somebody right there. We see that. We look at some of these folks, and we just see a lot of bad decisions that happen in life, and we don't know their stories, so we don't show compassion for those folks. And, you know, learning what I know now, I wouldn't change it for the world. And, you know, if I can help as many people as I can help, I'm going to try. And, you know, the first day I hit the streets, I got the young couple that I met with. If you check out the videos, it's going to be Terry and Joe. I got them to go into treatment and get on methadone maintenance. Very first day meeting with them. Now, I tried to get them into residential treatment, and I met with them several times to get that coordinated. I got in communication with Terry's mom, because she was Terry's support system And, you know, we tried to coordinate it to get them to go in, but they just haven't committed yet. They commit on the phone, but saying something in, on the phone and doing something in real life is two different things. And so that's where we're at right now with that. You know, I'm not going to give up on them. You know, sometimes it takes 20 no's before you get that one yes. And so that's all I'm betting on, is that I get that yes from them. And hopefully get them into some kind of treatment soon, because the amount of blues that they were doing, being homeless, being on the streets, you know, they see everything that wasn't working. I just want them to just get a taste of what could work for them and show them just the grass is greener on the other side. And that's why I came up with the name for my channel, Hope for Phoenix, because that's what I want to do. I want to show the people that there is hope being in the city that they live in, because for a while, you know, for a long time, in a lot of these people's hearts, that they haven't seen hope in a long time. So I just want them to know that hope still exists, and that, you know, if they come across my crossings, I'm going to do my best to show them and help them in their journey of recovery. So that's all I have for today. Just wanted to give you a little story on how I got into this game. If y'all ever want to reach out to me, you know somebody that's struggling, send it my way. They can reach me at nastybackpackpodcast@gmail.com. That's nastybackpackpodcast@gmail.com. It's your boy Nasty Backpack. We out.